Hello and welcome to the Human Boombox. My name is Megan Minty, and today on Music Miscellanea, we are talking singer-songwriters and the songwriting process. Now, today is our season one season finale, so we have a special treat for you today, a special guest with us. Please welcome, he is a singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, and award winner, Matt Zaddy.
Here we go again. Same old story, same old fiction, same old lecture. I wish we could let it be instead of inside in a riot.
How you doing?
Substantially well, because like I'm actually seeing you in person.
Yay!
See you like once during COVID
once in
passing?
The last 2 years. That's how we know things.
Yep.
So Matt, tell us a little bit about your musical background, being the expert we have with us today.
Expert.
Yes.
That's a big title to live up to.
No pressure.
I've been playing music professionally for about 20 years. In my 20s. I've been a music educator probably since I was 18, and I'm almost 40 now, so 20 years ish.
Okay,
my primary instrument is guitar, but I play piano, ukulele, bass. I sing. I also teach theory and songwriting. As a songwriter and as a performer, I've been performing professionally for 20 years as well. In my 20s, I was in a metal band called Starring Janet Lee.
Yeah.
It's tech death metal. I think for those of you that listen to that genre, think Cryptopsy meets Origin meets Mr. Bungle. So spazzy and technical and atonal and fun.
Yes.
With the occasional pig squeal. We toured around North America. We were signed to a sub-label of Metal Blade. I ended that project in 2011, originally planning to write a solo metal record. And when that band finished, I was doing some acoustic gigs around town and hosting some open mics. And I was playing a lot of acoustic guitar at the time. And all of these songs just started pouring out of me, thinking about the last 10 years of my life spent on the road and touring and basically fighting the utmost uphill battle.
Yeah.
And I started gigging, mostly just literally hosting an open mic in Streetsville, Mississauga, where I was living at the time. And people really responded positively to my original music. And I just kept getting offered work and work and work. And eventually I said, well, I got to pursue this. Like, I can't ignore it when, A, I'm really liking what I'm writing, and B, people are really responding to it well. So between 2011 and 2013, I wrote a stack of songs just kind of in passing while I was figuring out what I wanted to do. Recorded it in 2014 and 2015 and released my first solo record in November of 2015. The response for it was really positive. I was able to start. I did some touring across Canada, regular performing in my area especially, but also across Ontario on the regular. I started playing and performing art centers like the Living Arts Center and the Oakville Center and places like that. In 2019, I released my second record right before COVID.
Oh, nice.
Good timing, right?
Good times.
I was like, cool. Wait till I get my budget for you know, everything for
this.
Promoting it leveled completely. So during COVID, I obviously wasn't performing my normal, which is about 200 dates a year. I learned how to do the digital performing at home in a proper fashion with, you know, high definition video and quality audio. I also focused a lot on music education. I increased my student roster substantially, you know, how to have a good home setup for filming your own videos, because that's what I was doing. And then now it's gone on to how to play heavy metal and good practice habits. And we have a whole bunch of other things which hopefully will come to light.
That'd be great.
Yeah. So that's a bit about me. Like, I mean, for the most part, what I do on a daily basis is a mixture of songwriting, with myself, my partner Heather Christine, who I have a duo with called River North.
Yes.
I write with other artists. I teach however many instruments, much like Megan does.
Yep.
These us multi-instrumentalists.
Yes, multi-instrumentalists.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, what do I have to learn how to play today? Cool. I'll figure it out.
Yeah. I'll get to you.
And then I wish I practiced more.
Like, don't most we
of
all?
Like most of us. I'm like, I just really want to work on my craft today, but I have this list as long as my arm.
Yep. That is my everyday.
So yeah, that's a bit about me. It's, you know, like I said, this is working musician life. You know,
yes.
I do my own gigs. I do cover gigs. I do private corporate stuff. I songwrite. I teach. Every now and then I get one of my songs licensed, which is super cool.
Nice.
Yeah, that actually happened this year. I got a licensing deal with the city of Mississauga. They used my song Brighter Days as the official music for the 40th anniversary celebration of their sister city relationship with Korea, Japan.
Yes.
So that was bananas. I was like, cool. Thanks, city.
Thank you, city. I think it's good for our listeners to kind of listen to that, because I think a lot of people think that you're either just in your basement, not doing anything.
Or you're Justin Bieber.
Yes, or you're Justin Bieber.
I was like, if you want to know what a working musician is like, look at all the people behind Bieber.
Yes.
Those are the ones that have a really good gig, and all of us are like, that's a sweet gig.
Yep. That's the way to go. There is a lot of work going into being a working musician. And I think that's why, you know, Zaddy here is the best guest for this topic that we're talking about today. Singer-songwriters and the songwriting process.
Yeah.
So
that's my, like, if I had to choose something, that's my favorite thing to do. I go back and forth between what I like more, performing my music or writing it, because I love the writing process and then the recording process, because it's another creative piece of the puzzle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like the performance is fun. I think I'm like you. The performance is fun and I love doing it, but something about sitting and creating something from nothing.
Totally.
Rewarding.
Yeah, I know. It's there's I was gonna say, I don't think that not writing is an option for me.
No.
I think that it's an outlet, it's a vocation, it's a passion, it's part of my makeup. Like, I don't like, if I wasn't writing music, I would have to be writing something.
Something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think while we're on the topic, let's start with songwriting.
Sure.
So I was thinking about the songwriting process, and I've broken it down into what I like to call the 5 steps of songwriting.
Ooh, I'm curious what your 5 steps
are. These are my 5 steps.
Sure.
So, not in any particular order, which we will get to. So we're going, you got to have lyrics. You got to have your melody. For those who don't know what the melody is, it's usually what the singer's singing. If it's all instrumental, it's what you think the singer would be singing.
Yeah, I was going to say, that thing you focus on in the song while the rest of us are doing our jobs.
That's the melody. It's like the shining star.
Yeah.
Then you've got your chord progressions, who are actually taking that nice foundation of your song. You've got the rhythm or the groove that's kind of driving it. And then what I like to call step 5, the additions. So, you know, let's pop in a big guitar solo. Let's add, you know, a flute. Who knows? You never know what's going to come.
Yaz flute.
Yaz flute.
Yaz flute.
So that's what I think of. Would you have anything to add to that?
I'm going to think about that. So essentially what you're kind of outlining is like the pieces. So you've got some kind of lyrical part. You've got melody, harmony, and rhythm.
Yep.
And then, you know, you've got your arrangement is what it sounds like.
Yes.
I think when you were talking about what you were adding in, you're almost thinking about the production.
Yes, the production you know, all those, not extra stuff, but the stuff that makes it uniquely yours.
Yeah, 100%. Like, there are, sometimes the arrangement can be just the guitar part, but I mean, a lot of the time, like, I know on my last record, some of the songs were much more minimalist, and some of the arrangements ended up being pretty broad and big, like, you know, 3 or 4 guitars going at one time. I've got 2 different key tracks, one's on an organ, one's on a vibe. I've got, you know, bass and 3 vocals. And I'd say that those are definitely the components. I don't know if I'd call them steps, though.
Not your steps. So, I would take that back, actually. Yeah. I'm going to go with components.
Yeah.
Steps. What I'm interested, so every musician, I say, has a different process to how and in what order and what they do. So I am interested in what your process is.
Sure. This is, and then, and this, you may not like this answer.
That's all right.
it varies from song to song. I have some songs. I actually have memories of showing some of them to you when we were teaching together.
Yep.
Because I had my first record, I probably showed this to you in 2013. I had the melody for a song called A Way Out before I had anything else. And I said, I'm like, I got this melody. Dun, 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 dun.
Yep.
And I wrote the chord changes to that. The lyrics were written separately and then it worked really well with them. And it's one of those things that, as a writer, you will sometimes manipulate the phonetics to work with the melody, or you'll manipulate the rhythm and the melody to go with the lyrics. It's kind of like a halfway in between point there most of the time. So it ended up being like, we say it to the point, but do we mean it? Or are we just looking for a way out? And every song that I write is a little bit different. Sometimes the first thing that I get is lyrics. Sometimes it is a chord progression.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's a melody. Sometimes it is the rhythm. It's different for me every time. Like if I were to take any of the songs on any of my records and just say, like, I'm just going to pick two songs randomly off my last record. I'm going to take Busy. So with Busy, lyrically, I remember when I wrote them, it was it was after a fight with my then significant other. The music for it actually is sort of a mixture of a couple of different things. I got some of the guitar part ideas from playing Rhiannon from Fleetwood Mac. Mm. And over time, it kind of morphed into its own thing. It was kind of like halfway between All Along the Watchtower and Rhiannon.
Okay.
And because I was playing it my own way, I started having these licks sort of develop in it. I was like, well, this is mine now.
Yep.
And then the some of the arrangement stuff was, I have a deadline and I'm going into the studio and I want to see what I can create. So I ended up creating like some, you know, oohs and ahs harmonies in it. I ended up harmonizing some specific lines. And there's a couple of times where there's doubled vocals, where there's one part that's one, someone's going, slipping away until there's nothing left to fight for. And then I have like a lead vocal over top of that.
Right.
So it, in that song, the music was entirely separate from the lyrics, and they happened to, and I just brought them together, and it worked really well. And well, it's, you make it work. You know?
You always kind of make it work.
Sure. And if I took a song like A Dear Friend, which I'm actually going to be releasing a video for shortly. Yeah,
Look out for that, everyone.
One of those A Day in Zaddy's Life During COVID videos.
Nice.
So it's me and my cat and a lot of alone time and a Zoom video and maybe Napoleon Dynamite.
Nice.
Yeah, he's right there.
Oh God!
I have one of those Napoleon Dynamite dolls where you press the button. He's like, "Could you bring me my chopstick?"
And he's just sitting on a speaker. It's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. I remember one of the videos I did for the Guitar World. I'm going on a tangent, but I made all of the breaks in the video where I needed like B-roll cuts. I'm just pressing it and then responding to what he's saying. He's like, "This is pretty much the worst video ever made." And I was like, "Nobody asked you," and I threw it. And then I thought I broke it.
These are COVID times. This is what happens.
This is what you do. We talk to ourselves in basements. It happens.
Yeah, that's just like a normal thing now.
Yeah, my cat started responding to me, but with real words. It was an interesting day.
That might be a little bit more than COVID.
Right? Yeah. So A Dear Friend was one of the last songs I wrote when I went into the studio. Mm-hmm. And I just started kind of free form writing lyrics, thinking about the things that I missed.
Yeah.
And this was not even in COVID. This was before that. Yeah. This was just me thinking about my life and about the things. And that song for me was what it was kind of like a reminder and an affirmation for me to make time for the people that I care about. Mm-hmm. And while I was looking at the lyrics, I picked up my guitar and formed the chords to the lyrics, and the melody fell in very naturally. So that one started with lyrics as well. But the thing is, one of the parts in the guitar part, I think I showed you a year and a half before that, where it was like, it's like a very James Taylor kind of thing, right?
Definitely.
Like it felt like Fire and Rain or something, or You Got a Friend. And that part, I moved it to the key that I was doing it in, and it worked perfectly.
Sometimes the things just meet.
Think about it. How many banked riffs do you have?
Oh, so
where
many.
Where it's like, I don't have a thing that works with this now, but I've got it sitting over here.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting thing too, is I find that sometimes you'll have ideas that you don't know what to do with, that don't have a place yet, but the right time comes along, all of a sudden
and
it works.
And then you pull it.
Yeah. Like that was one for me. I find when I teach music, I'll be messing around on a tune or learning a new tune for a student, and I'll do it either wrong or very different from the artist. And I'm like, and press record and saving that for later.
That's for later. Something's going to come up.
Yeah. So many song ideas I came up with where I was just noodling a song for a student and trying to create an arrangement for a student. And then all of a sudden I've got a tune. Yeah.
Do you find that I think a lot of musicians find whatever you're kind of listening to at the time you're writing a song, do you find that it kind of bleeds in or influences?
We are a product of our influences. Right? It's not 100%, but it's there. Like when I was doing my last record, I was listening to a ton of Leon Bridges. It's in there for that reason. Like there are some melodies that I hear in there that I'm like, I probably wouldn't have come up with that if I wasn't listening to, you know, I better slow down cause I keep tripping on words I don't want to say. And it happens, you know, like it's one of those things that if you have something in your ear a lot, it's not going to maybe be the deciding factor, but it will definitely shape you.
Yeah.
The same way that, you know, if you're an author and there's certain literature you tend to lean into, it's going to have an effect on what you do.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I find that. Your answer is actually, I was thinking about it. I'm the same way with the writing process.
Like it could be one or the other?
I never know where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
I think I might sometimes, like, I have books of just lyrics just written out, essentially just poems without music.
Yeah.
That's all they are.
Yeah.
Waiting for something to go with them.
Totally. I have a book that a friend of mine gave me when I was in my 20s, and sometimes I would use it and sometimes I would not, but I keep coming back to it now. And if I have a thought in my head, I just start writing until my head or my heart says stop. And I'm like, you are going to be something someday.
Yep.
And it could be tomorrow or it could be 2 years from now.
Oh, yeah. I recently just looked in one of the ones I wrote, oh God, back in university, probably. And I was looking at it and I was like, I have a tune that fits this now.
Yeah. Ooh, I got a story about that.
Yeah.
So when I was, you'll relate to this because you might even remember it. So Megan and I actually went to high school together.
Yeah.
I had a few years on Megan. And there, I actually got called back in to when the music teacher went on mat leave. I think I was 20 at the time. They asked me to fill in. I was doing some substitute teaching in the high school anyway. So I ended up filling in for the instrumental band and guitar program as a teacher for 3 months. As it turns out, the vocal teacher also had laryngitis, a really bad case of bronchitis, and couldn't teach the vocal class for a month before that. So I also was teaching the vocal program, which was hilarious and amazing. But while I was there, I borrowed one of the school's acoustic guitars. And right after I had finished there, I kept it for the summer. I wrote this one song. This is a song on my first record called These Are the Days. I wrote everything except for one riff. Because I was like, it's missing something and I don't know what it is, and I banked it. And I think it was 2010, I was in this bar in Streetsville in Mississauga. It used to be this rock and roll bar called Marcello's.
Right.
I have a question before I continue with this in terms of how I describe this gentleman. How explicit can I be on this podcast?
You can be as explicit as you'd like.
Okay, then I'm going to say this in a way that people are going to understand. This guy was basically like if you listen to him talk, he was Scottish and Italian, and he sounded like a Scottish Italian Ginsberg. Like he was like a beat poet the way he talked, and he looked like a cross between Gene Simmons and Ron Jeremy.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Right. Yeah, and he had this, I love this place. It was like my home bar when I was, you know, in my 20s in Streetsville, first time living on my own. And it's 3 a.m. at his bar, and he's a friend of mine, so we're there staying late, having a few drinks, and by a few, I mean that bottle of Glenmorangie behind the bar. And then he has this old acoustic sitting above the bar on a shelf. And I pulled it down, drunk as a skunk, and I started playing it upside down, because it's a righty.
Oh, right.
And all of a sudden, I came up with it, and I was like, that's the missing riff!
There it is!
And that is how I finished that song. It was 3 o'clock, or probably 4 o'clock in the morning, knowing me. It was probably 4 o'clock in the morning with a number of drinks in me with a guitar upside down. And it ended up being the riff that finished the tune.
Right.
I had the song from 2003, and I finished it in 2010.
That's a long time.
And the lyrics didn't come to me till 2012 or 13.
Right.
So it's one of those things that, you know, I'm not saying that it necessarily has to be that long, but that it came together so organically. And yeah. I love how the song turned out.
Usually you do. It's yeah. either the ones that just fit together over time or the ones that just pop into your head mm-hmm. are usually the most satisfying ones.
Brighter Days. Which right. was the one yeah. that I said, License to the City. That one was one of those ones where it was like I was on a timeline deadline going into the studio and needed another tune. Whole thing came together in a day.
Same.
Lyrically and musically.
Yeah. It's yeah. So for any, you know, aspiring songwriters out there, time is not a factor.
No, I was going to say, you know what motivates some people? You give yourself a deadline. You'd be surprised how inspiration kicks into gear. Yeah. When I know I've got a session coming up, all of a sudden I have all these ideas because I have to.
Because you have to, yeah.
Like sometimes, like people tell me they get writer's block and I said, you want a cure for writer's block? There's two things that I always recommend. Yeah. One, give yourself a deadline, a real deadline. Mm-hmm. And two, go learn a bunch of songs.
Oh yeah.
And then try to learn those songs in a bunch of different keys. And you will be surprised the things that you will fall into that will be yours.
The things that come out, like I find a lot of my ideas, especially nowadays while I'm teaching, you know, because you're teaching so many different varieties of music, you know, everything from classical to metal and everything in between that, mm-hmm. you know, I'll dawdle while the students, you know, trying to pick through together. And I'm like, ooh, that's kind of nice.
Press record, save that for later.
Save
yeah.
that for later. I'll 100%. Put it together.
Yeah.
Those like, are, yeah.
I one of my favorite little licks that I had was on a song of mine called Little River that I did in a lesson. I know I did it in a lesson. And it was one of those things where I was like, ooh, record, nice. Save for later.
One second. Yeah. Yeah. Just take this moment out.
Exactly. Like, exactly.
So, speaking of writing, do you prefer to write alone or do you prefer to write with other people or both? Or are they different?
I get different things out of each. Mm-hmm. I have done most of my writing alone mm-hmm. as a singer-songwriter. When I was in my metal band, I wrote most of the riffs, but we put them together as a band.
Okay.
So I had a general idea of the order, and then we would, because it was very angular music, we would work together in terms of trying to make the transitions as comfortable as possible to give the song an actual flow. The metal that I played was not your Western pop song format. It was more like a series of movements, more like some 20th century classical might be.
Right.
Like it used very similar harmony. It's just that we used kind of spazzy jazz chords in it. So it sounds modern is the best way I can describe it. But with the singer-songwriter stuff, I found, like my drummer loves to write with me, but we haven't done enough of it. I would love to do more because he has great ideas. I just find that based on scheduling sometimes, the right. majority of what I end up coming up with is on my own. And then I'll bring it to the band as a, not a finished product, but a pretty close to finished product. Yeah. And then we can kind of fine tune it together or I'll fine tune it with my producer and the guys in the studio when we're doing it. Because outside perspective can be a really good thing. Sometimes you have your lens looking at this tune. Mm-hmm. And I found this specifically with the last producer I was working with. He's a producer in Toronto named Ross Atrullo, who I think now is Juno Award winning. He's had a few records where I know they were nominated. I think he won one as well.
Oh.
He's great.
Awesome.
He really pushed me to make my songs better. Which is hard because it becomes your baby, you know, yeah. and it's like you don't want to change little things. But I was like, no, if I'm working with this guy, it's for a reason. And by the end of it, the songs that I brought him, we were so much on the same page. He's like, yeah, that's what I would have done. There so we had a positive impact on my writing and arranging. But also I think that when you get in sync with somebody like that, you can really get some magic.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. When you find that like a good mm-hmm. writing partner.
Yeah. Like my wife and I write together. We've written Heather and I, my wife's name is Heather Christine, by the way. She's a singer songwriter as well. Just more in like the jazz kind of mixed in with some world music. She can sing in Spanish and a couple of other languages as well. Like we wrote some tunes together and sometimes they came together very, very naturally. And sometimes we butt heads and we both know it's because we care about it.
Yeah.
So it's not something where we feel that it's, Like I mean, it can get heated in the moment because we care. That's just how we are as people. Like this matters to us, you know. But we both understand that we're both just trying to make it the best that it can be.
Yeah.
Like, we released a song with our duo during COVID, a COVID song, like so many others, called This Too Shall Pass.
Yes.
And I love the song. I think we did a really good job with it. And it was one of those ones that came together in a day. And then we have some other songs we were working on during COVID where it was much more of a battle to put it together. I have a couple of other students that I work with where I do songwriting lessons, and we end up composing as part of the lesson.
Yes.
And sometimes it comes together in a lesson, and sometimes it comes together in four.
Yeah.
Like, it's different. Like I said, I think you can agree, it's a little bit different every single time.
Yeah. You never know what you're going to get. Yeah. It's a box of chocolates right there.
I was going to say.
That's right. Thanks, Forrest. But yeah, it is very different. Like, there's the pros and the cons to writing alone and writing. Because I find I write mostly alone. And, you know, but you get so zero focused that I love to hear other people's. Like, when I kind of have a semi-finished product, I'm like, okay, now pick this apart.
Totally.
Sort of thing, which sucks.
Yeah, but yeah, that's like I said.
You know,
like,
you gotta do it.
It's like your baby. Like, yeah. I have a few friends of mine that are good writers, and they work with different writers all the time because it gives you a different perspective. Yep. And sometimes, I'm not even going to say sometimes, most people can use that.
Yeah.
And that's why you'll find that there are songwriting teams out there.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's a songwriting team in LA that a friend of mine works with called The Messengers, and they've written for, like, Chris Brown and Shakira, and they wrote a Bieber record.
Oh.
Yeah. And it's three or four of them that work together in this. Like, there's one guy that kind of heads it up, but there's three or four guys that work together on it. And, you know, if it's funny when you look now at, like, a pop song, and you look how many people are involved in the writing process.
Right.
It's not just like, oh, it was Bob Dylan, or oh, this was James Taylor, or, you know, oh, this was Prince. It's like, no, there's
five to ten people.
I remember when I looked at, there was that song that Paul McCartney did with Kanye West, and was it Rihanna?
Yeah.
I think I've had it.
Yeah,
enough.
4 or 5 seconds, I think it was.
Four or five seconds had 10 songwriters on it. I'm dead serious.
10 songwriters.
Yeah.
And you have McCartney in the room.
Exactly. That's the thing. Like, you have this master songwriter, and you have all these other people involved in the process.
Yeah. You never know. Actually, that's a very good segue, too. So, we move on to kind of singer-songwriters, right? So I was thinking about it, and I was like, when I say singer-songwriter, I know what I mean. And I think most people know what you mean, but it's a hard thing to define, right? Because obviously there are a lot of singers who write songs.
Mm-hmm.
My perspective, actually, I want your perspective first before I tell a thing. Like, what would you classify as the singer-songwriter?
Typically, I would call that somebody that is writing their lyrics, their melodies, and some kind of instrumentation.
Yeah.
Because I know lots of people that can are good lyricists, but they're just lyricists.
Yes.
I know lots of people that are good instrumentalists, and I would call them instrumentalists, but I mean, they're not singers.
Yeah.
And I know some singers that they are very, very gifted melody writers, but they don't necessarily play an instrument, or they don't necessarily. And this is where it gets blurry, because they know what sound they're looking for. They just might not have the language to communicate it.
Yes.
Because I know lots of singers that are master melody crafters.
Yeah.
But they don't necessarily have the ability to play it out on a piano or a guitar. Like, I mean, when I think singer-songwriter, most of the time I think somebody in a room with a guitar or a piano.
Right, yeah.
Some kind of instrument where you can make harmonic arrangements.
Yes.
That's kind of like my go-to description for that. But I can't say that somebody that mostly just writes melodies and then works with somebody else isn't a singer-songwriter. It's it's a little vague there. But I mean, most of us are thinking, they're like, yeah, I know what you're thinking, Matt. You're thinking Ed Sheeran, bro. I was like, well, yeah, but I mean, I'm also thinking Paul Simon. When it gets outside of folk music or some kind of acoustic guitar thing, I mean, like, look at somebody who's writing music that's sequencing.
I mean, yeah.
They are writing. It's just that instead of writing it on paper, they're sequencing it in software.
Right.
Like, I know lots of people that I'll give you an example. There's a guy, not a guy, sorry, there is someone I know who is a digital artist, and they don't play any instruments, and they program
everything.
And I would call them. They would be. They sing too. I would call them mm-hmm. a singer-songwriter. But it's you know it's all programmed. So it's like, well, did I need the you know the physical instrument in order for it to be a singer-songwriter? That's debatable now
because it's very debatable
because
now.
We have access to so much technology that you can create on a screen as opposed to having to write it out on an instrument.
Exactly.
Because, I mean, do you have to play all the instruments in order to be able to be that the composer?
No.
Look at people who write symphonies. They don't play all the instruments. No. I mean, I'm assuming that they don't. Mozart might have, but, you know.
You know, but, like, they're probably, you know, I was trying to think of that because it is a very blurry line. That's been kind of cast, especially with the digital age now, because there's so much you can do. I always equip it to like singer-songwriter. I almost think of as almost a genre now.
Same.
In a way.
Yeah.
Like,
and it usually ends up being this
folk-ish.
Like a focus acoustic
kind
thing.
Kind of acoustic.
When I go to like a folk music conference, it's a bunch of that.
Yeah.
But it's not just that. It's
but
just
it's not.
Primarily that.
Yeah.
And I'm this one of these folkies in the corner. Like, actually, it's funny when I say that because every time I think that I'm not a folk artist, I listen to a pop record. And I'm like, oh my god,
I am
so folk. Like, there was this singer songwriter again that I met at Canadian Music Week, and we ran into each other, we exchanged cards, and we were messaging each other. And she's like, yeah, I listen to your stuff. It's pretty folky. And I was like, oh, cool. Send me your link. And I listen to hers, and it's like ultra poppy, all, you know, programmed beats and stuff like that. I'm like, I'm such a folk artist.
Like, oh, man. Yeah. I'm that guy in the corner with the guitar, aren't I?
100%. Every time that I think I'm not, I listen to pop music, and I'm like, I totally am.
Right. And while it is like, I always kind of think like a singer-songwriter in the genre spect could go in a room and perform all on their own. They don't need a band. They can have a band, but they don't necessarily need a band. But then now, again, there's some blur.
Yeah.
Right?
I know. Well, I look at artists that can program all their stuff in a laptop and then sing along. Are they karaoke singers? Well, it's their track.
It's their track. So technically they're playing it.
And now the digital instrument sounds have gotten so good, sometimes you can't tell the difference. Like, I remember the first time I heard Superior Drummer. For those who don't know, it's a software program for programming drums, but it's real drum samples. And they have even programmed in things to humanize it.
Yeah.
So you know how people hate digital drum sounds because it sounds very mechanical? Well, they've programmed in like a humanize function where you can hear the rattle of the kit.
Right.
Which is like creepy and awesome.
A little bit, but yeah.
Yeah. Like, awesome. And there are entire albums I've heard that have used this where you could not tell the difference.
I know I'm finding stuff, like I'm going to my recording software and I'm finding stuff all the time and I'm like, crap, I can use that? Mm-hmm. Right? And just, it opens up your songwriting abilities.
Yeah, it gives you options you never had before. Like, I remember I was listening to this guy, actually this guy's my favorite YouTuber, Adam Neely. And he said that, you know, he said that he thinks that everybody, when they're a teenager, should have a DAW to work with. And I agree, because if I was working with a DAW from the time I was 15, the amount of things that I could do by the time I was 20 would have been ridiculous. Like I'm old, and by old I mean I'm almost 40. So I was on that cuspy edge where in order to have really good recording software at home, it wasn't, not all these things were available to us. So I was going into studios and we were still recording on physical boards and transferring to digital DAT tapes.
Yep.
Like I remember I recorded a record with my high school where we recorded in a studio where that's it. We did it on digital DAT tape, and then it was eventually transferred to a digital medium to master it in Pro Tools, when Pro Tools required big, giant, expensive hardware.
Yep.
Whereas now the only thing you need is like a little iLock key in order to be able to access it, and it's all software.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can get, you know, the simple version for free online.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like watching the recording world progress over the last 20 years has been, it's been interesting.
It has been. And I think it's opened up a lot of different creative avenues for, you know, musicians, especially young musicians coming up. We're going to finish this off on a little, fast. No, I don't know what I'm saying. Hold on.
Speed round of questions. Lightning round.
It's not a speed round.
Lightning round.
Just like, we're going to say, a good old My Favorite Things.
Cool, that's I can what we're dig gonna it. Call yeah, it. Yeah, let's do it. Let's okay. do it. Let's do it.
So, all right. We're going male and female. So singer-songwriters, in your perspective, in your head, if you could pick your favorite male singer-songwriter of all time.
So mean. So mean.
That's just a big question.
It changes, too. Day like, to day. Like there are times where I'm convinced it's Neil Young. There are times when I'm convinced it's John Mayer. I don't care what anybody says. That guy's a genius.
That guy's fantastic. Yeah. He is really, really talented.
But the one that's probably that I listen to the most right now that I feel for males, Leon Bridges. Love him.
Yeah.
Like, there is something about... I find that the more that time passes, the two things that I keep coming back to are folk or folk rock artists and rhythm and blues artists. And Leon Bridges, for me, as a songwriter, like that album, Good Thing, oh, man. Ooh. I could sit there and listen to that album. Like that or Coming Home. I could listen to both of those albums front to back and be entirely satisfied musically in every way possible. Like there's amazing there's amazing melody. There's amazing groove. There's amazing harmony. There's amazing rhythm.
Yeah.
It's rhythm and blues, man. It is, for me, it is one of those things where I have, you know, some musical training where I tend to prefer some things that are a little bit more intellectualized sound wise. Yeah. I like complex harmony. I like a depth of color in my sound, and R&B. I don't mean like, you know, Rihanna when I say this. Yeah, let's like, be real here.
We're talking
like rhythm and blues, rhythm soul and blues. Music, yeah. You know, like Motown. There's a depth of harmony that sings to me, and the way that it's crafted feel, it hits your soul, man.
Yeah.
And I find that folk music does the same thing. It is the music of the people.
Yes.
And I find the blending of that is what I love the most. And yeah, I'm going with Leon Bridges. Okay. Final answer.
Been traveling these wide roads for so long. My heart's been far from you, 10,000 miles gone. Oh, I wanna come near and give you every part of me, but there's blood on my hands and my lips are unclean. In my darkness, I remember Mama's words reoccur to me. Surrender to the good Lord, and it'll wipe your slate clean. Take me to your river. I wanna go. I'll go. Take me to your river. I wanna know.
Quality to post. Mm-hmm. Quality. I was having a hard time thinking about this.
I could name 10.
Yeah.
I could name 10.
Like every day, especially now. I was like, my go-to goes to Paul Simon, especially stuff with Garfunkel.
God. Yes.
So good. Songwriter.
Paul
Tell
Simon
me a
is,
story.
Thank you. I had this conversation actually with a gentleman I met while I was hosting virtual open mics during COVID. I met him through those, and he came to see me play last Thursday. And he said to me, he says, one of the things that I really like about your music is that, you know, there are some people that are just kind of writing lyrics to fill space, but your lyrics are a story. And I said, that is one of the nicest things you could say to me.
Yeah. That story time. I was thinking about Johnny Cash too. I'm not even a big country person, but
Cash is a master writer.
Cash, he can tell a story.
And that's what I find is the most moving and this is something that you get because realistically folk permeates itself in so many different genres, like in country music, it permeates itself in, like, you'll get soul folk artists Leon Bridges, Justin Nzuka, people like that. I mean, you could even call Ed Sheeran a folk soul artist, you know, because there's this blend where the rhythm and blues and the folk ended up doing such wonderful things together.
Right.
Yeah. And we're completely on the same page here. There's got to be a story there.
When you're on the street, when evening falls so hard, I will comfort you.
Prevalent right now in today's music.
Don't get me started.
It makes us sound so old. Today's music just doesn't have the same, but it's true. Like, yeah. Storytelling. Hold on a second.
Old man shakes fist, old man shakes a cloud. Old man yells at cloud.
Right now.
Shake harder, boy.
I mean, I find sometimes I'm sitting with my students and I find I'm like, that music is just not what it's lit to be. And they're like, God damn, you're old.
Yeah, I was like, say, then they start using words like on fleek and lit. And I'm way too old for you.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I was like, I just, we're done here, kid.
I'm going to sit in my chair.
I'm going to go. Yeah, I was going to say, go read your dictionary. Learn real words.
Learn your words. But yeah, you lose that thing that when I find, especially when I find like a newer artist nowadays that are telling a story, I'm like,
that's why I fell in love with Leon Bridges. Yeah. There's a story there.
Yes, there. Mm-hmm. So on the other side of things, female singer songwriters.
Feist, bottom line.
Feist, nice.
Love
pick.
Her. I'm going to make a couple of caveats with that. I remember there was a point in time where I was going to sleep listening to Feist every night.
Oh, yeah.
She is a master songwriter.
She is.
Like, and minimalist in the best ways possible.
Yes.
There's never something in there that doesn't need to be there.
Yeah.
Or wasn't, I'm going to say it, wasn't meant to be there.
Yes.
There are others who I would very clearly put up there that you would expect, like the Carole Kings and the Joni Mitchells, but there's something about Feist. She just had an impact on me.
Yeah.
In ways that most writers have not. But there's one last thing I will say about that. There is one group that is no longer together from Ontario that is probably next to her the best folk songwriting I have ever heard. I'm not the only one who thinks so. David Crosby commented that they were that good.
Oh, wow.
There's a band called The Au Pairs.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Listen to the like the song, In the Long Winter, We Can Bring Us Down. Oh, my God. I've listened to that record on like long drives at night, and I'm sitting there with getting chills.
Yes.
I was so sad when I heard they broke up.
Oh,
that being said, go listen to Lydia Prasad. She's amazing, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she's killer.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm getting into like, never mind duos. Yeah. Thing. Civil Wars.
Oh my God.
Oh.
If I was going to say, if you want to pick a male female duo, they're the best.
Yeah.
I have learned so many songs of theirs because with female singers, I've sang them with Heather. I've sang them with a couple of other friends of mine. They're perfect. They were a perfect band.
Yes.
And when they broke up, I was so angry and so heartbroken.
I was too.
Because I mean, I like don't get me wrong. If you've listened to Joy's solo stuff, I
love her solo stuff.
Oh my God,
too.
It's great. And John Paul's solo stuff. Oh, like. Heather and I, we went away for, was it a holiday or I think we were driving home from a holiday we took this summer, and we listened to both of their solo records back to back, and we were both sitting there like, I don't know what's better. Like, they were really good apart. I mean, they're even better together.
Yeah.
But they were such good writers.
They are.
Oh, man. That's like writing that I get jealous of, you know?
Yes.
Where I'm like, I wish I could write something that good.
You only know what I want you to.
Another female. I gotta plug this. Mackenzie Lee Mayer.
Oh, I know.
She is, in my opinion, the best country songwriter in Ontario. She is brilliant. Love her.
There's so many.
I can name like probably 50 or 100 more really good songwriters that I just love. It's just that, you know, I find that there are certain people, it's like you happen to hear them at a certain time, and it just...
And it hits you somewhere.
It moves me. It moved, like, every artist who I've named here has moved me in some way.
Yeah, I found that it was very hard to choose a female singer-songwriter because literally I grew up just idolizing female singer-songwriters because that's what I wanted to be.
No, I get it. And there's a bunch more that I know I haven't listed here that are brilliant. And it's just one of those things that the one that I think had the most impact on me was Feist. Yeah. Leslie Feist is a genius. Like, she is.
Yeah. I think when we pick favorites, it always comes back to that impact.
Yeah,
like,
that's
who
it
is. So, like, I was trying to decide my female one. I ended up with Sheryl Crow.
It's amazing. She's
because
great.
Because she's the reason I play guitar and sing. That's basically... Honestly, take every 90s female singer song, like Fiona Apple, Sarah McLachlan.
But Fiona Apple is... Oh, my... I cannot...
Take any of them. I will be there.
I cannot say enough good things about Fiona Apple.
Yeah.
I would say... And I'm not, I don't want to criticize an artist, but early Amanda Marshall.
Yes.
Not later Amanda
Marshall.
I woke up with a killer hangover was not my thing, but Birmingham.
Oh, so good. I think one of my biggest regrets in life is not being old enough to go to Lilith Fair.
There you go. Oh, like, my goodness. Sarah McLachlan. Jeez. Oh, there's somebody who moved me.
Yes.
Moved me. Like, even now I'm getting chills thinking about this.
To this day.
Yeah.
I love my friends. Everyone knows her from the podcast, Ricketts. She used to make fun of me because I used to fall asleep to Sarah McLachlan's Surfacing album. And I was like, because it's that good that it makes me sleep well because I could think about the greatness of that.
I've been long, long way. Jungles.
I'd like to hear what everyone else's favorite singer-songwriters are.
Sure, yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. Follow me on all of the social things, you know, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. It's at the Human Boombox Pod. Leave a comment there. Let us know what's going on. Where can we follow you, Matt?
Most of my social handles are Matt Zaddy. So Matt, M-A-T-T. Zaddy like daddy, but with a Z.
Yes.
If you search just Zaddy, you will get lots of other things because that's a millennial term for hot older gentlemen.
Yes.
So
be careful how you search.
If you Google Matt Zaddy or go to mattzaddy.com or type Matt Zaddy in on any of your socials, I will be there in a heartbeat. You'll find a mixture of things of my original music, photos of food and cats.
Yay.
There's lots of that. As far as a live performance or anything like that, I am now gigging pretty steadily.
Oh, nice.
There will be a lot more, especially for 2022. I have some big plans in terms of getting around the country. So
perfect.
I'm stoked. Yeah, I'm stoked to be able to get back out there and like really have like a connection with an audience. I'm very excited.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be great. Yeah. Matt is great to see live. If you can catch one of his shows, go to it. It's great.
Cool. Thanks so much for having me. This has been great.
Thank you so much for having. We will see you in March for our season premiere. But until then, this is Megan Minty, and I am the Human Boombox. Mm-hmm.